Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Sunday, October 13th, 2024. I'm Steven Jensen. Hope you had a great week and a great weekend. I'm recording this show on Sunday evening, right after GCW Fight Club Night 2 just aired on Triller TV Plus. So those results are fresh on my mind. Got a lot to talk about today. Got a lot of thoughts on GCW and stuff from all across the world of independent professional wrestling. So let's go through the topics and jump right into it. On this edition of the Weekender, we have results for GCW, Fight Club, Night 1 and 2. Night 1 was the Art of War Games. Night 2 just aired, as I mentioned, right before I started recording this over on Triller TV Plus. Got all the GCW results right here on today's show. Also, our results for West Coast Pro, The Thing That Should Not Be. This was their 6-year anniversary show. Also, our results for HOG, Believe in the Glory, Revolver, Epic Over Texas, XBW, Fear, and JCW Lunacy Episode 7. This is JCW Juggalo Championship Wrestling. So a lot to talk about on today's show. A wide variety of topics. And, well, as far as topics, a lot of stuff within the results, right? But, you know, results all across the board on today's episode from all over the world of independent wrestling, as I mentioned. So we got GCW, West Coast Pro, HOG, Revolver, XBW, and JCW Juggalo Championship Wrestling. Let's get on into the first set of results. I'm going to start off today with GCW, The Art of War Games. This show took place last night, and this was from the Showboat Hotel in Atlantic City. So technically, this was on October 12th, and it's available over on Triller TV Plus. I'll make sure to tell you all where to find all the results, or all the shows, rather, and give you the results for if you want to check the shows out yourself. But, of course, this happened on Triller TV Plus, and I always mention I'm not sponsored or endorsed by Triller TV Plus, but I do think that it is a great platform, and as a, you know, independent wrestling fan, especially a GCW fan, I think it's more than worth the value, in my personal opinion, as a fan. You know, just the amount of stuff you get over there, and you know, we're going to be talking about not just GCW, but other, you know, results along the way on today's episode alone, that are all part of that monthly package over there. And I think it's like, I was in at $5 a month for the grandfather package, like, you know, when it started. I think it's still only like $8 or something. So just throwing it out there, you know, once again, I'm not endorsed or sponsored to tell you to go sign up. I just feel like if you listen to the Weekender podcast and you hear me talking about all these shows and you're not watching these shows on Triller TV Plus, you're just kind of doing yourself a disservice as a fan, in my opinion. That said, these are the results and my thoughts on everything that went down. Show started off with GCW Tag Team titles on the line. Oh, by the way, before I even get into that, I need to mention right off the bat, because I'm about to talk about Violence is Forever, they're actually wrestling FTR. They're doing VIF versus FTR. Massive dream match. As y'all know, Violence is Forever is my favorite tag team in the world. I love Dominic Greene and Kevin Koo. They mean a lot to me as a wrestling fan. And as for like what I do with Fightful and covering any wrestling stuff, I owe those two guys more than y'all could ever really imagine and understand. But the reason that I'm not covering that on today's show is because it's happening in DPW, which is an awesome promotion that I love to cover right here on the Weekender as well. But because I need to record this show today, and because I don't know when that's airing, I've not seen anything about being able to watch DPW live tonight. And because I don't know when it's going to air, you know, I'll obviously talk about it when it's available. So whatever, you know, week that the show airs, that week on the weekend or right here on the show, I will make sure to give you my deep dive thoughts on VIF versus FTR, because I cannot wait to watch that myself. But that was just a reminder, you know, I'm not going to have DPW results on the show because I'm recording this before that actually happens. Now, back to GCW. Started off with the tag team titles on the line. Violence is Forever. Dominic Greene and Kevin Koo defeat Grim Reefer and Ruckus. I mixed Grim and Reefer into one word there for a second. We had Grim Reefer and Ruckus, two, you know, legends, of course, in their own rights. The finish here was, I wrote down the sick kick, Chasing the Dragon. VIF has been doing different variations of the Chasing the Dragon lately. You know, the traditional would be, you know, the Brainbuster and kind of like roundhouse kick combo. But more recently, they switched it up to the Brainbuster and Berserker Knee as a homage to Bryan Danielson. And even more recently, they've added in the sit kick version of this. So something, just a little wrinkle, a little thing to keep your eye on as a as a VIF fan as they kind of make little tweaks and adjustments to that Chase and the Dragon and make it more and more of their own. But once again, VIF gets the win there to retain the tag team titles. They were not on the show tonight, obviously, because they're going to be wrestling in DPW, as I just mentioned. After that, we had Alec Price over Gringo Loco. Finish of this one was a 720 DDT. Now, I forgot to mention Art of War Games. This is a traditional War Games match and event, so there's two rings next to one another so that the main event can, you know, everyone can be caged in, as you would expect for a War Games match. So the reason I'm mentioning this for this match in particular is because Alec Price was able to run across one ring and then jump off the ropes onto the ropes of the other ring and then hit that 720 DDT. So very cool, and I've talked about it in recent weeks, how I appreciate how Alec is using this as his new finisher, because I think it's just really badass. But he's actually doing more than just that. He's used a different finishing move in another match we're going to get to, but nonetheless, that 720 DDT is really, really badass, and he continues to innovate different ways he can hit that thing, which I, you know, obviously appreciate as well. So, that said, Alec Price gets the win over Gringo Loco, and Gringo Loco had an awesome finish in a match we're going to talk about in a little bit. Something that he's adding stuff to his repertoire. These two guys, Alec Price and Gringo Loco, I was watching, so this show was happening at the same time as AEW. And, you know, obviously I'm going to give you my full thoughts on AEW Wrestle Dream over on the Spotlight. That's every Thursday morning with myself and Jeremy Lambert, Fightful Overbooked. We actually interviewed the Rebel Starbuck as well just yesterday. That's going to air on Thursday. So that's the interview this week. I think y'all are going to really, really enjoy that interview. But the reason I'm bringing this up is because the reason that, I'm going to obviously give you my Wrestle Dream thoughts on Thursday, but I was watching Wrestle Dream and GCW at the same time last night, and my buddy Mike Hughes, who comes over and watches a lot of the shows with me, he was not familiar, like, at all with what I was watching on GCW, but I was telling him, I was like, watch this match, like, pay attention to this match when Alec Price and Gringo were in there, and I was like, both these guys are, like, really, really damn good, like, you know, both of them have even been on shows like Ring of Honor, like something he recognized, and he watched it and became an instant fan of both guys. So, you know, I like using that kind of as a litmus test too. People that are, you know, whether they're hardcore wrestling fans that just don't pay attention to the indies, or maybe people that are just straight up either AEW or WWE fans, it's always cool to get like a first impression that somebody has on a wrestler you're a fan of, or a wrestler you're not a fan of, you know what I mean? Just, I like to get first impressions on people and kind of gauge, you know, because it's a different type of point of view that they have than someone like me who watches it, you know, so much. You know what I mean? Next match we had was the JCW title on the line. This is the Jersey Championship Wrestling title. We had Masha Slamovic defend and retain over Carrie Morton by disqualification. Essentially what happens here is Griffin McCoy comes out and attacks Masha to cause the DQ. That's setting up stuff for the next show that we'll talk about. After that, we had Sydney Akeem over Leon Slater. The finish of this one was Slater throwing a kick, and Sydney ducks it by doing a back handspring, hits a second back handspring, so it does, like, you know, the double back handspring cutter, the final act, and gets the 1-2-3. Akeem is still undefeated in GCW. After that, we had the number one contendership on the line in a hardcore six-way scramble match, where, and this was the number one contendership for the GCW world title, if I didn't just mention, Ciclope defeats Too Tough Tony, Bam Sullivan, John Wayne Murdoch, Lou Nixon, and Mr. Danger. His match was nuts. I cannot do this justice at all. Mr. Danger, you know, it's so funny because if you know Mr. Danger's in a match, you can say confidently before anything even happens, he is going to do a swanton off something high. He does it every match, and he'll always figure out a way to do it. He can't help himself. And it always gets a massive reaction because of how impressive it always looks. We're going to talk about that a little bit more for the next show, too, in just a moment. But he did a swanton off of, like, a moving truck. It was really impressive. It was after somebody gotten thrown off on top of everybody, he went ahead and flew off himself. But this is the type of match with everybody involved that it's just, you know, you can't go spot by spot, and you can't really highlight too much because just so much wild stuff is happening. Including, you know, Too Tough Tony hitting a signature flaming punch where he literally lights his fist on fire, and it always looks good. Like, I love the, like, sometimes the fire doesn't go over well in wrestling, right? Historically speaking, especially, like, if you go back and think about Ultimate Warrior versus Hulk Hogan in WCW when he throws that fireball that completely misses, or in really recent memory, even when, you know, when Cruel just recently had that happen, when the fireball didn't go as planned against Kojima in MLW. So I always appreciate that Too Tough Tony really lays it in there with those flaming punches, but this match was nuts. Ciclope winds up getting the win here after he hits a top rope frog splash onto a Bam Sullivan. Bam kicks out at two, and then he hits like essentially like a hidden blade through a tube to the head for the 1-2-3 onto Bam Sullivan. So Ciclope is officially the number one contender for the GCW title. After that, speaking of other technically number one contenders for the GCW title, and a man making his return, who I am very fond of as a human being and as a fan, we had Cole Radrick, the Ratty Daddy, the King of Wretched Mountain, Wild Heart, Bloody Buddy. I mean, how many names does this guy have? He is the holder of the GCW brass ring. He is Cole Radrick. He is back. He defeats former GCW World Champion Blake Christian in his return. The finish here saw Blake Christian hit a curb stomp onto Cole, but Cole gets his foot on the rope to break up the pin. Blake follows up with a springboard 450 splash from the ring apron to the inside, goes for the cover, and Cole reverses Blake's pin into an O'Connor roll and gets the 1-2-3 himself. So, big return for Cole Radrick. If you want to know how hyped up he was for that return and how hyped up me and Jeremy were, Cole joined us live on the Spotlight this past Thursday, so if you missed that, you can just go over to Fightful Overbooked. He was on there for just a few minutes with us. I really appreciate his time. We were hoping to interview him a bit longer during the week, but our schedule just we couldn't make it happen during the week for various reasons. And Cole is just such a good guy. And you know, for those of you who might not know who don't watch the Spotlight, Cole's been on that show as a guest more than anybody else, like outside of maybe John Mosley, aka Mose, who you know we talk about all the time from KOBK, who does you know shows promotion and works for a lot of the companies all over the country now, really, but really especially in the Southeast as well. But those two guys have been on the show like 10 times plus each at this point, so you know, obviously on a personal level, I'm very biased. I'm a huge Cole Radrick fan, so it was great to see him come back and get a clean win over former GCW champion Blake Christian, and Blake's losing streak continues. I will elaborate on that a little bit more shortly. After that, we had the GCW Ultraviolet Championship on the line. Brandon Kirk defeats Rina Yamashita to become the new champion. This match was also completely nuts. There was many times where I thought Rina was going to retain over Brandon, but I was saying it to my buddy, to my buddy Hughes, when he was over here. I was telling him, because he didn't know anything about either of these competitors, and I was saying, I think this is Brandon Kirk's night. I was like, Yamashita's had this title for a long time. She's been an amazing champion. But Brandon's got a lot of momentum, and I could totally see him being the person to, you know, get the torch passed to him for the Ultraviolet Championship. And that's exactly what wound up happening. This match was awesome, and it was a great passing of the torch, as I mentioned. Basically, what winds up happening here is after Rina tries everything, she's had, like, all of her moves, splash mountains and everything. The top rope splashes, a million tubes have been broken at this point by the end of the match. And Rina just grabs Brandon by the dick, and he winds up just hitting with a nasty lariat and then follows up with a psycho driver onto, like, you know, all the broken, you know, glass and tubes and everything that's kind of, like, all over the ring at that point, and then pins her 1-2-3. And Yamashita basically gives the endorsement to Brandon Kirk as well of respect, and Brandon Kirk is officially your new GCW Ultraviolet Champion. And the main event of the show, we had Art of War Games, which was Deathmatch Royalty defeating Team GCW. So, once again, this is the type of match where you're going to have to go out of your way if you want to deep dive this to really watch this yourself, because so much happens. It's a War Games match with, you know, people coming in every handful of minutes. The match lasted almost 30 minutes total. We had some surprise entrance as well here, and a huge turn to close the show and everything as well. So, basically, the gist of what happens in a nutshell is Deathmatch Royalty is the team of Broski, Jimmy, Mance Warner, and Matt Cardona, and their mystery partner is Bully Ray. They defeat Team GCW, which is Manders, Effie, Joey Janela and Matthew Justice. And Matthew Justice, you know, longtime member of SGC, also recently signed a contract with MLW, which was pretty interesting. He's worked with them for a long time, but recently signed some sort of deal with them as well. And I mean, at the end of this match, like, Matthew Justice, like, does a big dive, as you'd expect, you know, through tables and stuff, so he's, like, out of the match. You know, people are kind of getting eliminated one after another. Not you know, actually eliminated, because this is an elimination match, but, you know, people start getting taken out, like, the outside. Bully Ray and, I think it was Bully Ray and Mance together. I can't remember for sure, but Bully Ray was definitely one of the people that lit a table on fire and double choke slammed Joey Janela through a flaming table, and the thing lit on fire big time, and it was like his t-shirt was on fire, his hair was probably on fire, like that thing didn't go out immediately, and he had to stop, drop, and roll to put that thing out. Essentially what winds up happening is, at the end of the match, Deathmatch Royalty is in control, and Alley Catch comes out, and we haven't seen Alley Catch for a while, and I'll elaborate on Alley Catch here shortly, but she winds up coming out and she hits Effie in the back with an exploding barbed wire bat. And that was also similar to, that was actually the way that Matthew Justice got taken out of the match. Broski Jimmy hits him with the same type of weapon, an exploding barbed wire bat. And it knocked him off of like a scaffold through a bunch of tables. That's right. Alley Catch hits Effie in the back with this exploding barbed wire bat. And then Mance hits Effie with a running knee to the head, and then follows up with his implant DDT for the 1-2-3. So Deathmatch Royalty wins, and Alley Catch has turned on Effie. So I'm going to elaborate on more of this here in just a second, because it obviously, you know, had repercussions and follow up on GCW Fight Club Night 2, which just took place right before I started recording this show. This was also available on Triller TV Plus. This was from today being October 13th. It was also from the Showboat Hotel in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And the difference here was the first night show was outdoors with the two rings. It was like right in front of like this parking garage. It was a really cool setup, actually, in my opinion. And then this second show was inside, more of like a traditional type of like showboat atmosphere. The first match we had was Alec Price defeating Austin Luke, Broski Jimmy, Jody Ara, and Marcus Mathers in a five-way scramble match. Finish here was the 720 DDT by Alec Price onto Austin Luke for the 1-2-3. After that, Alley Catch comes out, and she does this really, really good speech, in my opinion. I thought it's probably the best promo I've ever heard Alley Catch cut. And the most I've heard her talk in a while. You know, I've seen some of her old shoot interviews from like years back where she's just like kind of kicking back and, you know, and talking about stuff. But this was a really, really good promo, because she comes across, it's obviously a heel promo because she turned on Effie, but it's almost like a sympathetic type of thing, because without getting too like inside baseball here, like, so she talks about how she wasn't booked for like the last month plus for GCW. And how Effie didn't have her back during that time. Now, on a personal level, I have no idea how much of that is true. Like, you know, if Alley Catch really wasn't being booked by GCW and Effie really wasn't helping, and they're like trying to, there actually is any issues between the two, and they're trying to, you know, air those out publicly, you know, to make some money. But, you know, and I have no idea, like I said, it's just regular speculation, but I'm just letting y'all know that I had heard things fairly recently about Alley Catch and GCW having some problems, and like there was a lot of confusion as to why she hadn't been booked on the shows for like the last month. Now, whether that was all storyline and that was the whole point, and like that was like, that's perfect. If that's the case, that's perfect. Or it's also perfect if, like, you know, that happened in real life and they're using real life scenario to draw money in wrestling. I mean, that's obviously not a new thing in wrestling too. That actually works very, very well in most cases. So I just kind of want to throw that out there too, that I had heard some things, but also not everyone's the most reliable source too. You know what I mean? Like if I hear somebody say something, it doesn't mean it's true. You know what I mean? So that all said, Allie Catch gives a really good speech, essentially about what I just mentioned. She hadn't been booked in GCW for over a month. Effie has not had her back, but Allie Catch has had Effie's back all along the way, even throughout this whole thing with Mance Warner. Like, she was the one having to take power drills to the head and stuff, and, like, having to literally catch strays for Effie when Effie was in this blood feud for so long with Mance Warner and Deathmatch Royalty. So Allie Catch is basically doing this for herself now, and there's definitely some character changes. I wouldn't be surprised if she started going by, like, Allison or something like that. Like, I can just see this feels like, and also, for what it's worth, she looks to be in, like, really good shape as well, like, physically. So I think it's one of those things where she might be going through a bit of a repackage, and she's obviously been very talented for a long time. You know, I was watching her live back in, like, 2018 or whatever, maybe even earlier than that, in Nashville. She was known as the heart and soul of Southern Underground Pro, Supgraps. Like, she was a regular there. She had some of the best matches in that building in the Basement East. So, like, I'm a long-time Allie Catch fan, obviously. And I just feel like this is kind of like a crossroads in her career, and I'm really interested to see where it goes. But I can't do the promo justice, though. Like, she did a really, really good job making you feel kind of conflicted about the whole thing of, yeah, you turned. You're a bad person for turning on Effie, but if the reasons you did it are true, like, I kind of feel bad and I kind of understand. You know what I mean? Like, it's an interesting route that they're going with this. After that, another interesting route they're going with something. This is really confusing. So the Allie Catch stuff, I really enjoy. I like where this is all going, and I like that I don't know exactly what's going to happen. Like, those are all good things. This next stuff I'm going to talk about, not so much. So we had Richard Holiday with Perro in his corner over Mr. Danger. The finish of this one was Charles Mason's music hits, and, well, actually, I need to explain before I even say this. Richard Holiday and Perro are heels, and I know I said a couple weeks ago how confused I was about that, and I still am, because they're heels now for snitching on Charles Mason and having the police arrest him, but Charles Mason was like a despicable heel that the guy, like, it's so confusing because, like, Holiday and Perro got pops and did babyface turns when they turned on Mason and when they quote-unquote snitched on Mason. Like, these were all good things to get Charles Mason out of there because he was, this once again, just absolutely despicable villain. But now Holiday and Perro are still positioned as heels, and Mason somehow has become a babyface, and it's because the fans don't like snitches. It's like, it's so backwards, but I needed to mention all of that because the finish of this match, if I didn't, you would be very confused if you haven't been keeping up. So basically, Charles Mason's music hits towards the end of this match, and it makes everybody think that Mason's going to come out, and he gets a babyface pop. He's not there, but, like, his music gets a babyface pop. And Richard Holiday, it's all been a plan. Like, we realize, like, he's the one who played the music, because this distracts the ref. Perro hits a chokeslam onto the apron onto Mr. Danger, and then Richard Holiday hits his 2008, his basically the final reckoning, Dustin Rhodes style, the twisting vertical suplex that he calls the 2008 for the 1-2-3. Mr. Danger, at one point, I gotta give him another shout out. He did a swanton off of a balcony. It was nasty, and nobody caught him. Like, he straight up just did a swanton. I can't even tell you how high it was. It was, like, at least 20 feet in the air. This guy did a swanton off of this balcony, and Perro and Richard Holiday completely missed him, and he just flat back right onto the tile floor. You know, it just is what it is. I'll stop there for now, for time reasons, but I definitely have more thoughts on just, like, Charles Mason, Richard Holiday, this whole storyline, and how weird all this is, and also how unfortunate it is for someone like Mr. Danger when they have a match where, like, they go out there and, like, kill themselves, and then Richard Holiday does, like, three incredibly basic moves and beats him, and the crowd's also just confused because, like, he's still a heel but shouldn't be. Anyways, we'll move on. I'm sure I'll have more thoughts on that in future weeks as we continue on with GCW results, as we always do. After that, we had Cole Radrick versus Matt Cardona. This was awesome. So Matt Cardona came out and initially said he wasn't going to have a match. He was going to take the night off because he's the GCW GM and, you know, so he can do whatever he wants. Cole Radrick comes out and challenges him. Cole Radrick defeats Matt Cardona. The finish here was Matt Cardona going to try to use lighter fluid on Cole Radrick, how they had used it on Joey Janela the night before. Cole is able to avoid this when the referee grabs the lighter fluid from Cardona. Cole hits a Stone Cold Stunner and then follows up by a Little Sebastian's Curse and pins Cardona 1-2-3. So in back-to-back nights since Cole Radrick's return, he has defeated two former GCW World Champions in Blake Christian and Matt Cardona. And just to remind y'all, that brass ring that Cole has, it's essentially money in the bank. He can cash it in whenever he wants on any championship. So, you know, he's being built right now as a guy who can beat champions and beat, you know, legit former GCW champions. I feel like it's just a matter of time before Cole Radrick is the GCW champion himself. Really hope that happens for him and for me as a fan. After that, we had Rina Yamashita over Blake Christian. This was the former GCW Ultraviolet Championship who just lost the championship the night before against, as I just mentioned, the former GCW World Champion. The finish here was Splash Mountain through a door bridge by Yamashita onto Christian for the 1-2-3. After the match, Blake sits in the ring for like 5 minutes, and he just won't leave, and he's just losing his mind. He's just on this terrible losing streak ever since losing the heavyweight championship. After that, we've got the GCW World Title on the line. Masha Slamovich defends and retains over Griffin McCoy due to no contest. Essentially, similar to the night before, essentially what winds up happening is this time Kerry Morton comes out and interferes on behalf of Griffin McCoy. This just sets up the next match, which was was going to be a 2-on-1 handicap match and then became a tag team match. So ultimately, we wind up getting Masha Slamovich and Megan Bain defeating Griffin McCoy and Kerry Morton. The finish of this one was, towards the end of the match, Joey Janela helps the babyfaces out. Masha grabs Griffin McCoy's watch that he wears to the ring, hits him in the head with it. The Megasys follows up with a spear onto Griffin and pins him for the 1-2-3. After the match, Joey Janela cuts an amazing promo, basically just talking about how the recent entertainment era of GCW has been garbage, and the changes Matt Cardona has been making have been terrible, and the people he's been bringing in, like Bully Ray, are not good for GCW, and they need to get back to their roots and get back to being the best independent wrestling company in the world, putting on the best matches with the best talent. Just a great, great speech from Joey Janela, and he basically says 2025, you know, they're reclaiming what GCW used to be and that old feeling that the company used to have about it. So, as a GCW fan, I'm excited to hear that. There are a lot of things about the recent GCW landscape that I am not a fan of. You know, I'm a big fan of most of it. You know, I'm obviously a huge fan of the company, but there's definitely been stuff that has been head-scratching and that I have not enjoyed along the way as well. And, you know, I could imagine where Janela is coming from. I feel like that speech, there was a lot of truth and a lot of realness in the words he was speaking to that microphone. Because he also speaks, I think, for a lot of the OG day one GCW people, like Matt Tremont, for instance, who at the end of the show kind of echoed some of these words too. But yeah, this was a great speech by Joey Janela. Another one that I can't give, you know, I can't give enough credit to, because I just, you know, you'd have to listen to it for yourself. But it reminded me almost of like back in the day when Paul Heyman would rally up the ECW troops backstage before they go out there for a big show. It had that kind of vibe to it with the stuff that Janela was saying and the way that the crowd was responding to it. So, you know, this was really good, I think, for the future of GCW, and I'm really interested to see what changes they make, you know, the end of this year and heading into 2025. After that, we had a death match where John Wayne Murdoch defeated Lou Nixon. The finish of this one was JWM hitting a running knee to the back of the head of Nixon through a glass pane in the corner for the 1-2-3. And the main event of the show, we had Cyclope over Matt Tremont in a death match. The finish here was a top rope splash with light tubes onto Tremont from Cyclope. Tremont kicks out at 2. Cyclope follows up with that tube hidden blade right away, hits Tremont with it. You know, thing explodes. Then he pins him 1-2-3. So Cyclope defeats Matt Tremont. After the match, Tremont grabs the microphone and does a speech of his own, similar, like I said, kind of the Janela one, saying that Ciclope is the kind of guy who's OG like they are, and like this is what GCW is all about, is what we saw between the two of them in this main event. And also, Ciclope versus Mance Warner is going to be next week for the GCW World Championship. So it's an interesting time right now for GCW, because you have Ciclope, who's been rising the ranks and getting big wins, and, you know, he looks like he could potentially be the next GCW champion with the way that he's been booked, but he also has the story brewing that's, like, waiting to explode at some point between himself and Miedo Extremo, you know, his former tag team partner Los Macizos. And Miedo hasn't been around for a while. Like, he's been laying low. So it's a matter of time before, you know, is it something where, like, Ciclope will actually overcome Deathmatch Royalty and overcome Mance Warner, and then, you know, Miedo Extremo, you know, makes his big attack in return on Ciclope, and it's, like, a title feud between those two? Or does Miedo maybe, you know, prevent Ciclope from defeating Mance Warner, you know, ultimately? I don't know. There's a lot of ways it can go with that, because also you have Cole Radrick with the brass ring ready to go right now. He can crash head in at any time and become the champion potentially. So you have two people right now. And there's other contenders as well, people who have done really well, who've been rising the ranks, and that I know GCW can really rely on. But, you know, it's interesting. It's very interesting times in GCW, but in my opinion, two really good GCW events back-to-back, both available over on Triller TV+. Moving on, got results for West Coast Pro. This is the thing that should not be. This is the six-year anniversary show for West Coast Pro, available for free on the West Coast Pro YouTube channel. Show took place on October 11th from the United Irish Cultural Center in San Francisco, California, and these are the results. Show started off with the prestige title on the line. Alan Angels defends and retains over Ishmael Vaughn. This match is like less than a minute. Alan Angels, I think he calls it the lights out. I call it the black mass. It's, you know, the spinning heel kick, basically, or the spinning roundhouse kick, whatever you want to call it. There's many names for this thing, but most people know it as Aleister Black's black mass for the 1-2-3. After the match, Alan Angels grabs the microphone and basically puts a challenge out there for somebody else, and AJ Gray answers the challenge. Waka Flocka hits the speakers, and AJ Gray makes his return, you know, to that building, to that area, basically to that West Coast Pro crowd. You know, AJ Gray is a former West Coast Pro champion. At one point in the very, you know, recent future, you know, just within the last couple of years, AJ Gray was like the top independent wrestler, in my opinion, unsigned in the world. He was really, really up there. I mean, we all thought he was going to be the guy to dethrone John Moxley and beat him for the GCW championship not that long ago. I mean, it's kind of, depending on this grand scheme of things, right, it kind of feels like forever ago in some senses, but like just the other day in others. But that all said, AJ Gray makes his return. He does not get the job done. He does not defeat Alan Angels, but I'm interested to see if he starts getting like more consistently booked some places that he was, you know, so we'll see. I'm very interested to see what AJ Gray's future looks like. But nonetheless, we had Alan Angels defend and retain the prestige title over AJ Gray in this one. The finish here was Alan Angels pushing the ref, pushing AJ like towards the ref. And when the ref's distracted, Alan Angels hits a dick kick from behind, falls up with Angels' wings for the 1-2-3. After that, we had Alec Price over Jai Jewel. The finish of this one was a punt kick. So a lot of the time we see Alec Price, if he's not going to do the 720 DDT, he usually uses the surprise kick. But this time he did like a running punt kick, which looked absolutely brutal, by the way. Like, I'm not opposed to him using this as one of his finishers as well. But y'all know me. Y'all know I love Alec Price. I talked about him at length with the GCW results. But a little, it was interesting. Instead of the surprise kick, went with a running punt kick to get the 1-2-3. After that, we had a six-person tag team match where Bodie Young Prodigy, Leon Slater, and Princess Azul defeat Hyon, Pomedio, and Toxin. The finish of this one was it was Leon Slater hitting a 450 splash off the top for the three count. After that, we had the DPW World's title on the line. Calvin Tankman defends and retains over Shingehiro Ida. The finish of this one was Ida hitting the Black Beast Bomber, his version of a running lariat, and Calvin Tankman is able to kick out at two. Tankman then follows up by hitting a pop-up spinning back fist, and then the Tankman driver, which is his version of the Steiner screwdriver, for the 1-2-3. After that, we had Sandra Moon over Johnny Robbie. Moon gets the win after hitting, I don't know what she calls it, but after hitting the, it's like an arm trap doctor bomb. Really nice, brutal looking move. I've seen them use it before, I just always forget the name of it. But basically like an arm trap doctor bomb for the 3 count. Up next, we had the West Coast Pro Tag Team titles on the line in a San Francisco street fight. This was Starboy Charlie and Titus Alexander defeating Los Suavecitos, the team of Ricky G and Danny Rose, who had Adrian Quest in their corner, to become the new tag team champions. The finish here was Titus hitting, I think, I don't know if the commentator just said this or if he actually calls the move Levitation Sensation, but it's really, I can't do this one justice. Like, it's kind of like a, it's kind of like a berserker knee, but he gets so much air. It's like he's so high up in the air. It's like he's coming off the top rope. It's really, it's a sight to be seen. It's very impressive. Titus Alexander is one of the like most impressive guys in the world. I mean, like just athletically speaking, a lot of people kind of compare him to like a young AJ Styles. And it's a comparison that is just like it actually, he deserves the comparison. Like I would not say that about many people, but his athleticism is just super, super impressive. But nonetheless, you know, Titus Alexander hits this really sweet levitation sensation, and then Starboy Charlie hits a top rope shooting star press through a door bridge and gets the pin so that Starboy Charlie and Titus Alexander are now the West Coast Pro Tag Team Champions. Both guys, former West Coast Pro World Champions, by the way. After that, we had Alpha Zoe over Mad Dog Conley. The finish of this one was both guys trading big slaps to the face, and then Alpha Zoe hits a nice running lariat to get the 1-2-3. After the match, Mad Dog attacks Alpha Zoe with his dog chain and beats him down with that chain. If you want to know more about Mad Dog Conley, by the way, he was a recent guest on the Spotlight just within like the last few weeks. After that, we had the West Coast Pro heavyweight title on the line. Kevin Blackwood defends and retains over Jake Something. Basically, what happens for the finish of this one is Jake Something and Kevin Blackwood are like up on the top rope. But technically, I guess Blackwood's on the top rope and Jake Something's on the second rope. Jake's going for like a big superplex or something. He's trying to set something up on the ropes, and Blackwood reverses him and hits a double stomp where they both come off of the ropes, you know, down to the mat with the double stomp, and Blackwood gets the pin for the 1-2-3 to retain the championship. And in the main event of the show, we had the West Coast Pro Women's World title on the line. Zara Zacher defeats Takumi Ehara to become the new champion. The finish of this one was Ehara going for a kick, and Zacher ducks it with one backhand spring into a cutter. So basically like a final act, almost call it a Reggie style of... almost Reggie style or script style, Sidney Akeem. That's the name I'm looking for. And a nice final act for the 1-2-3. After the match, Ehara actually puts the title belt around Zacher's waist as a sign of respect for the new champion to pass that torch. By the way, as I mentioned, you can watch that show completely for free over on the West Coast Pro YouTube channel. That is our 6th anniversary show. Moving on, you got results for HOG Hog. This is House of Glory, Believe in the Glory. This show took place on October 9th from the NYC Arena in New York City, New York. This is available on Triller TV Plus, and these are the results. First match we had was a 6-way scramble match where Darren Richardson defeats Amazing Red, Jay Lyon, Jay Armani, Jay Bougie, and Joey Silver. That's a lot of JJ and J's. Jay Bougie is just a letter J. Jay Lyon and Jay Armani are both J-Y's, but 3 J's nonetheless all in this match. The finish of this one was kind of hard to explain, but basically Silver is pinning Armani, and Richardson comes up and does a La Mahasral cradle onto Silver to get a pin of his own and become the number one contender to the Cruiserweight Championship that Gringo Loco will be defending a little later in this show. After that, we had the HOG Tag Team titles on the line. The Cold-Blooded Killers, the team of Nolo Catano and Raheem Royal, defend and retain their championships over Miracle Generation of Dustin Waller and Kylan King. The finish of this one was Miracle Generation hitting the Power and Glory combination of, you know, the superplex and top rope splash. But Armani pulls the referee out of the ring. Nolo Catano then does a mist to the eyes onto King, and then they do a double team burning hammer and top rope double stomp and pin King to get the pin and retain their championships. After that, we had the HOG Cruiserweight title on the line. Gringo Loco defends and retains over Fuego del Sol. The finish of this one, I just wrote down top rope reverse angle slam. It's the best way I can describe it, but it does not do it justice at all. This move is so awesome. I've seen Gringo do this before, but this is like the best I've ever seen him hit it, the smoothest I've ever seen him hit it. You know, he's the smoothest in the game, in my opinion. So this guy, always innovating. You know, he really got over that base bomb off the top rope for a while. You know, like that sit-out power bomb from the ropes. He does, you know, one-man Spanish flies every now and then. But this is a move that I'm not seeing anyone else doing. And when I say reverse angle slam, it's like the opponent. So, like, he takes Fuego, and, like, Fuego is not looking the same direction as him on his shoulders. He's looking the other way. So it's, like, it's really hard to explain. But it's, like, it's an angle slam off the top rope, but it's, like, it's inverted. They're looking the other direction, and they land on their stomach instead of their back. But this is really, really nice stuff, and Gringo Loco retains the championship. And the number one contender, as I mentioned, is Darren Richardson because of that opening match. So we'll be getting Richardson versus Gringo in the near future for that title. After that, we had Joe Hendry over Joey Janela. The finish of this one was it was a standing ovation, but yeah, it was just a clothesline by Hendry, and then he followed up with the standing ovation for the 1-2-3. And the fans all did, you know, the song and dance with Joe Hendry, as you'd expect. After that, we had the HOG Crown Jewel title on the line. Zilla Fatu defends and retains over Idris Jackson, who had Dr. Hillary P. Wisdom in their corner. Best way I can describe the finish here is basically Idris is in control of the match, and Carlos Ramirez comes out of nowhere, and he hits Idris in the back of the head with a chair, and this opens it up for Zilla Fatu to hit a Superman Samoan Spike and get the 1-2-3 to retain the Crown Jewel title. Up next, we had the HOG Women's title on the line. Megan Bain defends and retains over Lena Cross. The finish here was a running flying clothesline followed up by a Tombstone Piledriver for the 1-2-3 to retain. After that, we had the HOG Heavyweight title on the line. Mike Santana technically defends and retains over Jay Lethal, but it was by no contest to set up what happened next. But they go almost 25 minutes, Santana and Lethal, and they're trading a lot of reversals for, like, their finishers. They're both very well scouted throughout the match. Essentially, at the end, Jay Lethal goes for Lethal Injection, but Santana reverses it with a Tornado Lariat. And before he can get the 1-2-3, the Cold-Blooded Killers come out and they pull the ref out, and the referee throws out the no contest. The Solo Monster, who in my opinion is the best pro wrestling podcaster of all time, I'll give you my honest thoughts on that. I've known that for a long time. I've thought that for a long time, but I don't know if I've ever actually said that on any show before. I legitimately think that the Solo Monster, Jason Solomon, is all time best wrestling podcaster, and still currently to this day, like, you know, there's other people that I'm obviously a fan of and friends of mine that I like, but Saw Monster has been around longer than any of us. Like, I remember him from back in, like, around, like, 2010, maybe a little before that, and, like, he only keeps getting bigger and better, and it's cool because he's, you know, the GM of HOG, the on-screen GM. So he comes out and he's the one who makes the tag team match for the main event because of what happened in this Lethal versus Santana match. So we wound up getting Jay Lethal and Mike Santana over the Cold-Blooded Killers team of Raheem Royal and Nolo Catano by disqualification. Essentially, what winds up happening is Jay Lethal attacks his own partner, attacks Santana, and hits him with the title belt, and he aligns himself with the Cold-Blooded Killers, and the babyfaces come out from the locker room to save Santana after the match. So, really good stuff. I'd recommend checking this out. Check out all the HOG shows and support, you know, guys like Amazing Red, who, you know, really got me into indie wrestling back in the day. That's available over on Triller TV Plus, House of Glory. Moving on, got results for Revolver. This is Revolver Epic over Texas, also available on Triller TV Plus. The show took place on October 12th from the Epic in Grand Prairie, Texas. And these are the results. Show started off with the PWR Remix title on the line. Lince Dorado defends and retains over Ninja Mac. The finish here is Ninja Mac hitting his Phoenix as a Phoenix Splash 630 off the top onto a fake Lince Dorado. The real Lince hits Ninja Mac in the back of the head with the belt and then follows up with a top rope shooting star press to get the 1-2-3 and retain. I just hope we see more Ninja Mac in the States going forward. He's been in Japan, I feel like, for a long time now, like back and forth or, you know, doing excursions and stuff. I loved when Ninja Mac was a GCW regular, and he's a guy me and Jeremy interviewed him like really early on in his career over on the Spotlight years back, and he's a guy who I think is one of the best high-flying, you know, innovative guys in the whole game and has been for years at this point. So I do hope to see him on a more regular basis here in the United States because he's been, like, all over the place in the last couple years. But that said, Lince retains the championship there. After that, we had a tag team match where Children of the Scorned, the team of Tommy Prince and Gabe Wilder, defeat the Dub Club, team of Ryan Mathias and Casey Reynolds. The finish of this one was a Death Valley Driver top rope double stomp combo by Children of the Scorn to get the 1-2-3. After that, we had Vert Vixen over Hion. The finish of this one was a disaster kick off the second rope, kick out at 2 by Hion, and then a brainbuster by Vert Vixen gets the 1-2-3. I believe this was Hion's debut in Revolver, but don't forget that Hion, coming off of a big indie tournament for West Coast Pro just like within the last month. So, I mean, big things happening for Hion pop out of more shows. So you like to see that. After that, we had JD Griffey over Barrett Brown. The finish of this one was a low blow followed up by a leg scissors. That's a tongue tie, a tongue twister, a low blow, then a leg scissors, and then a rear naked choke. The referee has to call for the bell because JD chokes out Barrett Brown completely, gets the technical submission win in that one. After that, we had a three-way match where Moose defeats Jake Something and Brick Savage. The finish here was both Something and Moose hitting a double chokeslam through a door onto Savage. So Savage through the door, double chokeslam. Jake then low blows Moose and then hits the ropes and actually winds up running into a spear from Moose onto Something for the 1-2-3. After that, we had a sudden death scramble match. A lot of participants, a lot went down on this one. I'm running low on time. Exodus Prime won this match with the Angel's Wings, which he calls the Contra Code. After that, we had the MPX title on the line. Sky de Lacrimosa defeats Demo Diamond to become the new champion. The finish here was Death by Stereo, which is their version of the Death Rider for the 1-2-3 to become the new champ. After that, we had the Revolver title on the line. Ace Austin defends and retains over Fuego del Sol. The finish here was Ace Austin accidentally unmasking Fuego, and Fuego puts the mask back on, but when they stand up, they're ripe for the pick, and Ace Austin hits the fold, 1-2-3, to retain the title. After the match, Matt Cardona is on the big screen, and he challenges Ace Austin for the title. So we're going to be getting Ace Austin versus Matt Cardona in the near future for the Revolver Championship. And the main event of the show was a tag team match where Speedball Mike Bailey and Paul Walter Hauser defeat the Crew, team of Rich Swann and Matthew Palmer. You know, I really respect Paul Walter Hauser. I've talked about it before. I did not know who he was prior to him getting into wrestling, but I obviously have since found out he's like a very big deal like as an actor and in Hollywood and stuff, and he really respects pro wrestling, and he's really been busting his ass to have good pro wrestling matches, and like doing the stuff that he makes, doing the stuff that he does out there makes sense in the context of like the shows he's on and the people he's working with and stuff, and the eyes he brings on to wrestling too. So I got a lot of respect for guys like him that don't need to be involved, but do it for the love of the game and also take it seriously and like want it to be good. So you know he's a real fan. I appreciate that. Anyways, the finish here was Speedball hitting the Flamingo Driver onto Palmer through a door in the corner for the 1-2-3. So Flamingo Driver from one turnbuckle all the way to another across the ring. Boom, Flamingo Driver through the door in the corner for the 1-2-3. Speedball and PWH get the win in the main event. Once again, that is Revolver Epic over Texas. It's available on Triller TV Plus. Moving on, got results for XBW. This is X Brand Wrestling. It is on independentwrestling.tv. Use code FIGHTTALK. Unlike Triller TV Plus, I am endorsed by IWTV to tell y'all. You can use my code over there. It's FIGHTTALK, FIGHTTALK, all as one word, no spaces. Put that in the promo code spot on independentwrestling.tv or IWTV.live. It just lets the platform know that I am sending you their way. I appreciate y'all when you use that code. The show took place out of the H2O Wrestling Center in Williamstown, New Jersey. Once again, this was from October the 11th, and these are the results. Show starts off with a no-ropes barbed wire death match where Jimmy Lion defeats Hardcore by ref decision. The finish here basically was a choke out with barbed wire, and the referee calls for the bell because Hardcore is completely out. After that, we had Marcus Mathers over Bryce Donovan. The finish here was Mathers reversing Bryce picks him up, and Mathers reverses him with a sunset flip and gets the extra leverage with, like, kind of like a handstand for the 1-2-3. After that, Jhenai Kai defeats Erica Lee by knockout. The finish here was, I still don't know what Kai calls it, but she does, like, the running corner super kick for the, not even for the 1-2-3, like I said, for the knockout, just knocks her out cold. After that, we had Hammerstone over Richard Holiday, two people that know each other very well from their time in MLW. They spent years as allies and enemies on that show. The finish here between Hammerstone and Holiday was basically like Hammerstone gets the ref in the way, so like the ref gets distracted, and this allows Hammerstone to hit a low blow from behind, and then puts Holiday up in the torture rack and forces Holiday to tap out. So Hammerstone gets the win by submission. After that, we have the CXW Extreme title on the line. Tim Strange defends and retains over Anthrax. The finish here was a crossface with a rope. So, like, that's the best way I can describe it. Think, you know, crossface, but just, like, rope around the neck. And there was no tap out. So basically what happens is Veronica Kane, who is the general manager of XBW and also Christian Ross's manager, who is the XBW world champion, she calls for the bell, basically screw job style, while he's doing that crossface with the rope. So technically Tim Strange beats Anthrax by submission, but Anthrax never taps out. After that, we had the Unlucky 13 Blood in the Bank Battle Royal, where Anthrax defeats Alex Stretch, Atticus Reigns, Dagoomba, Dante Drago, Hellware Assassin, Jesse Daniels, Jimmy Controversy, Louis Jr., Louis Ramos, President Hawkins, and Roman 5-0. The finish here was Anthrax basically hitting a belly-to-belly. I know it sounds very anticlimactic, but it was a belly-to-belly for the 1-2-3. After that, we had a death match where Drake Younger defeats Matt Tremont. Y'all might remember Drake Younger from his time as, was it Drake Wirtz? Was that his name? And he was a referee for the WWE, and also, also known for other stuff, so y'all can do your research. But anyways, Drake Younger gets the win here over Matt Tremont in a death match. Basically reverses a Death Valley Driver attempt with a sunset flip and gets the 1-2-3. After that, we had the XBW world title on the line in a death match. Christian Ross defends and retains over Lou Nixon. The finish here was Veronica Kane coming out similar to what we saw earlier in the night. She comes out and she winds up actually stripping on the apron to distract Christian Ross and, or sorry, to distract Lou Nixon. I apologize. She's Christian Ross's manager. She gets on the ring apron and distracts Lou Nixon, which allows the opening for Christian Ross to hit a Death Valley driver and pin Lou Nixon to retain the title. And then right after the match, we essentially get a Money in the Bank cash in. It's like a paper contract. The XPW world title is on the line right away. We had Anthrax defeat Christian Ross to become the new champion. The feed for IWTV legitimately froze only for the actual finishing move. So, like, I don't know if it was like a... It looked like a setup for either a T-bone suplex or a Saito suplex. I could not tell. But Anthrax with the suplex... Actually, it might have just been the belly-to-belly because that's what he used in the Battle Royal. So it may have... It was probably a belly-to-belly. It was just... The setup looked like... I couldn't tell, but it was probably belly-to-belly, probably my guess. Anyways, he winds up pinning Christian Ross and becoming the new XPW champion. So there was obviously, like, there was a bit of, like, a one-night storyline going on with a lot of this, right? So kind of hard to keep up with, probably, as you hear me try to explain it, you know, this way. But if you want to watch the show itself, it's available on independentwrestling.tv. Use code FIGHTTALK. That is XBWFEAR. Last set of results we got here is JCW Lunacy number 7. This is Juggalo Championship Wrestling. JCW and GCW currently having a little bit of a mini feud as well. JCW and GCW. And it gets super confusing because there's two JCWs. We're not going to get into all that on today's show. Don't have the time. But I am looking forward to GCW versus Juggalo Championship Wrestling at Gathering of the Juggalos coming up. That said, this show took place, or was taped rather, on June 22nd, but just aired on October 9th. It's available completely for free on the Psychopathic Records YouTube channel, and this was from Harpo's Theater in Detroit, Michigan. These are the results for JCW Lunacy 7. First up, we had a 2-on-1 handicap match where the Ultimate Ellsworth, which, I kid you not, it is legitimately James Ellsworth, just cosplaying the Ultimate Warrior, trying to look like the Ultimate Warrior, doing the Ultimate Warrior, including his moveset. So yeah, Ultimate Ellsworth gets the win over the Midwest Misfits team of Chris Malvado and Dick Ramirez. He gets the win after hitting a Gorilla Press Slam and the Running Splash and double pins both Midwest Misfits. So Ultimate Ellsworth with the win in the handicap match. After that, we had a six-person tag team match where Congo Kong and the Redwood Giants, team of Hurtful Kurt and Painful Paul, love names like that. That's a throwback to guys like Mean Mike and Tough Tom and Disorderly Conduct and stuff like that. They defeat the Backseat Boys, team of Johnny Cashmere, J.P. Grayson, and Tommy Grayson. Backseat Boys, there's some OG lore. Man, I remember Backseat Boys back in the days of, you know, Trent Acid, R.I.P. The finish here was Congo Kong hitting a Rikishi driver and getting the win for their team. After that, we had Simon Gotch over AJ Riddle. Yeah, this was like less than 2 minutes long, squash match. Gotch gets the win by tap out with a rear naked choke. After that, we had the Brothers of Funstruction, the team of Yabo and Ruffo the Clown. They defeat Brayer Wellington and Jeeves. The finish here was the Whoop Whoop Driver, which is like a sidewalk slam and top rope double stomp combo for the 1-2-3 for the Brothers of Funstruction. And the main event of the show, we had Officer Colt Cabana, that is the Colt Cabana, dressed up like a police officer, defeats Too Tough Tony. The finish here was the referee gets distracted, Colt Cabana hits Too Tough Tony in the head with a baton, and then pins him for the 1-2-3. Once again, that is Juggalo Championship Wrestling Lunacy number 7, available completely for free on the Psychopathic Records YouTube channel. All right, so that's going to do it for this episode of the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. I've been Steven Jensen. Please hit the like button here on FightfulSelect.com. Please follow me on X at FightTalk_. Please use code FightTalk on independentwrestling.tv or IWTV.live. And please watch the spotlight on Fightful Overbooked every Thursday, 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. I'll give you all the Iggy right here. The only other person in the world probably that knows this is Jeremy. The plan in the near future is going to be We don't know if it's going to happen like next month or maybe beginning of the year, but we do plan to move the spotlight from an 8:30 morning show to a 6:30 p.m. kind of like late afternoon evening show. I've been wanting to make the move for a while, but it just wasn't possible because of being on the main YouTube channel for Fightful, where we had to have the morning time because of all the other programming on that YouTube channel. And then because of my work schedule, like, there's ways now that we can make it happen where it's going to be better, I think, for everybody. I won't be as tired in the morning, either will Jeremy. I won't have the hard out of, like, having to clock into work and rush topics to clock in on time and stuff. We can bring on live guests on a more regular basis. So I think it's going to be way better. And our West Coast audience can actually watch live, because in even on the East Coast, I mean, 8:30 in the morning is early for everybody. So I'm hoping that y'all keep following us, keep following the show and keep supporting the spotlight along with all these changes. I know it's been a lot of changes and a lot of moves and stuff in recent memory, but I love doing the show. I love, promoting independent talent, and, I love talking to Jeremy in the chat and everything. So, like, we plan on doing the show pretty much as we have been, but we're going to hopefully open it up in the near future to where it'll move from the mornings to 6:30 p.m. Eastern time on Thursdays still. And then, as I mentioned, we'll have more time to bring guests on, and we can kick back, and I won't have to rush, and it's just going to be, it'll be better vibes overall. I'm so tired in the mornings doing those shows, like physically so tired, and then I have other stuff in my mind. I got to clock in for my shoot job right after. I'm thinking about that stuff. Like, I think it's just going to be better for everybody, and a change that we couldn't make on the main channel, but a change that, is totally doable and overbooked, so appreciate y'all for all the support over the years. This show right here, The Weekender, is coming up on a 6-year anniversary in just like a month or so. So appreciate y'all as always. I've been Steven Jensen. Until next week, and enjoy some professional wrestling and Skull Vikings.